This is the way our bodies work, and it's not drama. It's just bodies do weird things sometimes, and it's just important to understand that and accept it.
Are you raising a family while also feeling like you're still growing up yourself? Do you wonder if you are getting it right? Or do you ask, where's the roadmap to building a happy, healthy life? Welcome to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. She's a pediatrician and a mom, and she helps the whole family.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, a board-certified pediatrician, but I'm not your pediatrician. Feel free to use my podcast as helpful information, but in no way do I intend my podcast to replace the advice of your physician. Your physician knows you and is in the best position to provide medical advice. Welcome back to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. Today, we're talking about puberty, body image, and how parents, particularly moms, can play a powerful role in shaping their daughter's confidence and health. Joining me is Dr. Melissa Holmes, a board-certified OBGYN, author, TEDx speaker, and co-founder of Girlology, an AI-powered app that helps provide specialized support centered around puberty, stage by stage. She's also a mom of three daughters herself. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a treat.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And okay, I said it, puberty. There's so much to cover. So let's jump in.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one of the most pivotal and sometimes awkward part of growing up, puberty and periods. As a co-founder of the Period Education Project, you trained medical students to deliver menstrual health education to under-resourced communities. Mm-hmm. So can we talk about that moment, the first time a girl gets her period? I know studies show that nearly 1 in 4 girls feel underprepared for that first period, and those that who are prepared have a higher self-esteem and body confidence. What do you wish every family knew before that first period arrives?
You know, I wish that families would not stigmatize menstruation. I wish society would not stigmatize menstruation so much, and which makes us all afraid to talk about it, right? It is just a normal bodily function. And if we can normalize it, then we can just help girls feel so much more confident when it happens and prepared.
Absolutely. I love that you say normalize it because it is stigmatized. And a lot of people think of puberty education as just periods and deodorant.
Right.
But you go deeper into relationships and decision making, autonomy. What's the broader education that's so critical and crucial for these preteens today?
Well, I think that when we talk about puberty, I mean, you're right. People think it's just starting your period and here's how you use a pad. But puberty lasts 5 to 7 years for most girls. And there's a lot that happens and transpires during that time frame. So not only do they have questions about their breast development, their skin care, their bigger emotions, they're starting to have interest in other people. They're starting to have romantic feelings. They need to understand that, which means they need to understand healthy relationships and consent, which means they need to understand sex and sexuality. So I always say, obviously there's no one talk that will do it for any kid, but these are layered conversations that we start as young as we can. Like, it's never too late to start, but start early as you can. And just start with the simple stuff. And at each age and stage, we can layer more complexity onto the topic. So that by the time they're teens, I mean, they've heard you talking about this their whole life, and it's not a big deal. Like, that's how we get rid of the stigma, right?
And what's really cool about what you said is you can start early. So what age or phase of a young person's life should parents really start talking about sex?
Well, if you're talking specifically about sex, what I find so interesting is kids are so curious. I mean, the three-year-old wants to know how the baby got in your tummy, right?
Yeah.
And so we can answer that accurately and simply without going over the top. So we have taught a what we call the science of reproduction class to mostly fifth and sixth graders. And the parents are like, ooh, that feels really young. They're so innocent.
I know.
Really talk to them about this now. But they're so curious. And they just want to know, like, how do we recreate life? They're not interested in foreplay and all the other things that we talk about when we talk about smooching and romance and orgasm and all of, they're not interested in that. They really are interested in the facts. So I think, again, starting young with animals, you know, like, oh, it, when the dog is humping your leg, you know, or when we lived on a farm and we had donkeys and the donkeys would do their thing out in the pasture and the kids in the neighborhood would laugh and they'd say, they're dancing. And finally, I had a talk with one of the moms and said, you need to let them know they're not dancing. This is how they make baby donkeys. And it's just a very simple explanation. And they go, oh, and that's all they need to know right there. And then later, they'll understand more. So I think you can start young. We've always said in Girlology that eight is great to learn about the science of reproduction, how the sperm gets to the egg, and what sex really is. And the other point I'll make is that when kids understand what sex is and the right context for it by the time they're eight or nine, it's really protective against sexual abuse because the average age of sexual abuse is nine, and abusers take advantage of kids who don't understand what's happening, and they can talk them into keeping secrets about what's going on. And if kids understand what this really is and the body parts involved and they know the names of the body parts, then they're less likely to become a victim. So there's a lot of reasons to talk early, not just because of stigma and education, but also for protection.
That is so powerful. And I really appreciate you sharing that. Even as a pediatrician, I wasn't aware of that statistic in regards to really knowing, again, thinking, rethinking how we share that information, and that it isn't just about learning the education and learning about our bodies. But what I heard you say is it also offers that layer of protection. Cool. And not in a scary way, but in a way that they can understand early and often. Cool. And then this way it sets them up for really protecting themselves and empowering themselves.
So they can know what it is and just know it's for adults. And that's important.
Yes, it is so important. And I'm a mom of boys. Uh-huh. And I feel not just myself. I knew for me, I started the conversation. I love that eight is great. I'm going to remember that. I started the conversation before I knew they were going to be getting the education in school. So I do recommend families out there that are listening, please check and see what the curriculum is like for your school and when they are going to start having those conversations in school. Because for me, I wanted to be the one to start that conversation before they heard it in school so that I was also prepared to answer questions. And we already kind of opened those doors so they didn't feel awkward about talking to me about it.
I love that. And when you're format, you get to decide the tone that it's delivered to. It's not dirty and gross like they would hear from their classmates. It's something pretty cool and interesting.
It is. But boys are often neglected in this puberty conversation. How do we make sure boys are part of this conversation? And what role do they play in creating a more respectful, inclusive culture around puberty and bodies?
Yeah, I mean, boys, you're right. They have been ignored largely because there's no big one moment when parents panic about, oh my gosh, my boy's in puberty. For girls, it's always like, oh, she's going to start her period. I have to talk to her about this. But what we've learned when we separate kids by gender to learn about puberty and reproduction, that's weird for them. It seems like the norm for us, but they come right out of the classroom and the girls want to know what the boys heard and the boys want to know what the girls heard. And what's interesting is we started doing it for all kids because girls need to understand what's going on with boys' bodies. Boys need to understand what's going on with girls' bodies. And, you know, what about the gender diverse kids who don't even know which classroom to go into?
Right.
And so by putting them all together, we're helping them understand each other. They are recognizing that each of them have their own weirdness going on, and they become more compassionate and caring towards each other. So I think that teaching them all about each other is really important.
I love that. And I hope educators that are listening also try to follow that same pathway too, because as you said, we do want to be more inclusive. And I think it's important for girls and boys and those that are really trying to find their identity to also hear the questions that each other is asking, because many times we're thinking it, but we don't ask it. And so it's wonderful. Yeah.
One of my favorite questions I heard from a boy in a class when we were teaching them about periods was, how fast does that blood shoot out? And we're like,
oh my.
It's not like a video game, right? So their questions are fabulous and they all are curious, and it's just a great way to help them all understand more.
If today's episode so far resonates with you and hits close to home, please like and subscribe to the podcast. We recognize that puberty is a complicated time for both parents and children, and the mother-daughter experience is a very broad one. But today's topic is a very specific conversation for parents, particularly moms who are managing girls' menstruation. So if this episode speaks to your experience, please share it with other parents. And if you have topics you'd like for me to discuss here on Growing Up with Dr. Sarah, reach out to us. Leave us a voice message. Instructions are in the description box below. Stick around. We have more on our topics coming up. Just reminds us that it is important to let them know exactly what's going on instead of letting them create the stories on their own.
Oh, yeah.
Many parents, you know, want to start that conversation. As I mentioned, I wanted to start it, but we get stuck on really what to say. Can you share some simple scripts or phrase that parents can use to open up that talk about how their body change is changing, or menstruation, or even consent?
Gosh, that's a lot of ground to cover, but I think there are just some overall rules you can use. Like, one is, start where they are. So when you're ready to talk about a topic, find out where they are. What do you know about periods? What do you know about sex? What have you heard from your friends? Tell me what you know, and then I'll fill in my facts. And to many parents' surprise, kids know a lot more than we think they know, especially in today's world with access to the internet. Or they have a lot of misinformation, and they, you know, they're learning from what they see on the internet, from pornography. I mean, that's where a lot of kids are going for their sex education. So that will surprise a lot of parents and help you kind of get to the right place. So I like to start where they are. I like to keep it simple, because no kid wants a lecture about any of this. Mm-mm. We want to just have small conversations here and there. Use news stories, use music lyrics, use stories, you know, from their friends to talk about whatever topic you want to talk about. So they don't feel so, you know, like I'm looking at you. Uh-huh. And I think we all, as a pediatrician, you know, that's just an easy way to get information from kids is to ask about their friends. So that's easy. And then the other piece of advice I have for a lot of patients is just drop the drama. Like, don't feel like you have to talk about it in secret. Don't feel like you have to carry on this stigma or continue to talk about, oh, you know, we whisper, we hide our pads when we go to the bathroom. You know, there's no reason to keep any of this quiet or dirty, or, you know, imply anything other than this is normal. This is the way our bodies work. And there, it's not drama. It's just bodies do weird things sometimes. And it's just important to understand that and accept it.
And I believe, too, when I hear you saying that, it makes me think of dads or other partners in the family relationship, and how it's okay to be open and not be not feel shame when it comes to other family members as well.
Right. I think, you know, we get a lot of questions from moms and dads about who should be the one to talk to the kids about sex or whatever. And I always think the other parent, if they're present, should check in after one person decides to have it. I don't care who has it. But the other one needs to say, hey, I heard you had that talk. I'm here if you have any questions. And because we deal with girls a lot more often than we teach boys, because we are girlology, we have a lot of dads who want to be a part, but they just don't know how and they don't feel comfortable. And what I always tell dads is that they bring a beautiful, goofy part to girls' lives, and they can tell stories about what it's like to be a dude, and they can also just be kind of, they don't bring their own baggage in. Like, as women, we've had our own experiences with our periods, with our moods, with things like that. And dads can come at this a little more objective, without all this emotional baggage that sometimes as moms we bring into these conversations. So I think dads are super important in having all these chats.
Well, I'd like to shift a little bit now, because that's so much information. We have so much to cover. I'd like to look at the landscape of body image today, a topic that nearly affects every child at some point, especially girls. Mm-hmm. And we know that 50% of girls between ages 6 and 12 are already worried about their weight. And that number climbs by the time they hit their teen years. So why do you think body dissatisfaction is starting so young? And what are we missing as parents, as educators, as healthcare providers?
It's such a complex problem, right? So there's no easy answer. But this has been a generational problem. Our mothers struggled with body image. Their sources of images were different than ours. I mean, we grew up with magazines, probably, right?
Yes, 17 magazine.
Absolutely. But our mothers that grew up maybe in the 50s had this whole other image they were trying to live up to. And even their mothers had the same thing. And so this has not only been passed down generationally, but each generation it gets compounded and gets bigger. And now today, with kids who have 24/7 access to comparisons on social media, or TV or whatever, it starts early. And our society puts a lot of pressure on having the perfect body. And there is no perfect body, right? Bodies are a vehicle to live your life through. And so we have to, as moms, as women, we have to do our own work before we can really change our daughter's future. Because truly, when you look at the eating disorder literature, mothers are clearly the biggest influencer on whether a daughter, a girl develops an eating disorder. Sometimes dads are implicated, but is by large, you know, moms. And so we really have to do our own work. And then we have to help our daughters understand how to navigate social media. I'm not an advocate for taking social media away from all of our teenagers. I do love the idea of delaying it. But we're never going to take it away. And now with AI, things are going to get even more complicated. And so we've really got to do a good job preparing our girls and boys to navigate that terrain, to understand what they're seeing, how to kind of put their armor on before they start scrolling, and how to really change the algorithm to benefit them instead of they continue to get these body, you know, focused, image-focused feeds. So I think there's a lot that we can do.
One of the most compelling things in your How to Like Your Body class is the shift of how your body looks to more of how your body feels and how it functions. Can you explain that body embodiment approach and how it empowers girls to really think differently about that traditional body positive message and how they see themselves or see others, especially on social media?
Yes. I mean, I think we've gone through several trends of trying to find something that will help this body image epidemic. And body positivity seemed like a good idea. We teach people to love your body, look in the mirror and say, I like my thighs. And it just doesn't work. It just has not, it's not realistic that we love our body all the time. And then body neutrality was another attempt. And it's just like, well, just be neutral. Legs are legs. Arms are arms. But that's kind of hard, too, because we want to feel a little better about it. And I don't think that we have to ignore our appearance, because that's really hard for adolescents especially. But we have to learn to appreciate our body differently. So embodiment is the practice of being in your body. It's more of a mind-body connection. So we can teach girls skills that help them recognize what their body needs, the signals that their body is sending to them, which tells them, you know, how to care for themselves. We teach them how to feel with their body, and which makes them experience more fun, makes them do the things they want to do. And we teach them to have agency of voice and action, meaning speaking their mind without feeling judged and doing the things they really want to do without worrying about what they look like. And it sounds like a hard task, but there's little steps that we can take that help them connect with their body more and begin to live more fully embodied. One of the most interesting things we've heard from the class, from the girls, and these are all middle school and high school girls, is they say, I wish my mom could take this class.
Aww.
And that just brings us back to the fact that we as moms need to do our own work so that we can stop saying, oh, is that healthy? Why don't we find something healthier to eat? Because that means, oh, that's going to make you fat. I mean, that's what she hears, right? So that is what our goal is with embodiment. And I'll say one other thing about it is that from a young age, we kind of condition kids to separate their mind from their body because they might feel hungry and they say, Mommy, I'm hungry. And you say, oh, you can wait another couple hours. Dinner's coming. Dinner will be, or I got a potty. Oh, you can hold it just a little bit longer. So we teach them to ignore their body signals. And so then we all live in our heads. And that's where all this self-criticism comes from. That's where we worry about being judged. And what do I look like while I'm doing this? And what are people thinking about me? But when we learn to feel in our body more, we lose some of that. And as an adult woman, I mean, I'm still learning those lessons, right? I've been in my head my whole life. And now I'm learning to feel more. And I'm actually having more fun. And I'm taking better care of myself. So
I completely agree. And I know that in my practice, I do try to share with them, listen to your body. Well, but I'm going to take it a step further and really define exactly what that means. And I do believe that parents and caregivers have good intentions in the things that they say, like you said, but they don't realize the impact of their words. Well, they hear, they'll say, yes, are you sure you want to have a cookie or let's have carrots instead of chips? And the kid just hears, like you said, you're calling me fat.
Right.
So how can parents reframe those body-related comments to be more supportive and be more empowering?
I think one of the simple things I can tell parents is just make no comments about exercise or food that might be interpreted as fear of fat, right? I mean, our society is so fat phobic, but make comments like we don't exercise to lose weight or get in our skinny jeans. We exercise to be strong. We move our bodies for joy. And so we really like to focus on joyful movement and strength. And those should be our comments. And when it comes to food, we need fuel to do all those things. So we need to fuel our body for function. But we also need to fuel our body for pleasure because food is community. Food is fun and makes us feel good sometimes, and there is nothing wrong with that. And so it's all about balance. And, you know, we don't want to eliminate any food groups. We don't want to shame any food groups. We just want to learn to have that balance. And it does take some work. It takes some practice. So learning embodiment, and we have a coaching series for moms that we do, and it's like one simple practice to do every week because it is a practice. It's not a lecture you hear and suddenly you understand and can do it. It's a practice.
And not to neglect boys, body yeah. image often impacts them well as well.
Wow.
What do you recommend for them? Because we know this is true for boys as well.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, boys want to get buff and they'll get muscular. I mean, that's the imagery that they're seeing online. And so again, it's talking about how their body is functioning, how their body allows them to have fun and do the things they want to do, and recognizing that what they're seeing isn't the reality of what most people's lives are or bodies are, right? So it's a little bit of media literacy and it's a little bit of taking the focus off of our appearances.
And it's an issue across all young people. What about young people who are figuring out where they fit in with their gender identity?
Same thing. I mean, it's really, When you learn some practices for embodiment, you are really just listening to your body. You are acting in ways that are in line with your values and what you enjoy. And if we follow that, then, and it's also learning this agency of voice and some mindset things like the inner critic. How do we quiet that inner critic? Which I think a lot of our gender diverse kids have, not only the outside voices that are mean, but their inner voice can be really mean too. So, you know, there are little practices we can teach kids that help them deal with the inner critic, but also just recognize that their body is the vehicle for them to live their life and have fun. It is their home. And it is not an object that should be, that is there for other people to gaze at or to judge. It's really the vehicle for them to do the things they want to do. And we just have to keep that focus on that.
And that's an amazing focus. I so appreciate you sharing that. And I appreciate, too, that you are also pointing out that we are conditioned to think healthy means weight loss and appearances, but that what you're saying is that we really want to reframe what that means. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned eating disorders. Mm-hmm. What should parents start to worry about when body image becomes a concern and that things might be tipping into something more serious, like disordered eating, anxiety, depression? What are the red flags we really should be watching for?
Well, if anybody has any concerns about their child possibly being at the extreme end of, you know, heading into an eating disorder, please talk with their pediatrician immediately. I mean, that there, this is not something to solve on your own or to get answers on YouTube or TikTok or anything. This is serious business. And so the red flags are your child suddenly decides she wants to be a vegetarian. Now, that doesn't sound like such a bad thing, but keep a close eye. Your child suddenly has a new exercise routine. Your child is suddenly, behaviors are changing. I mean, these are some of the same symptoms you would see for depression or anxiety. They're staying in their room more. They're not eating dinner with the family. They're eliminating entire food groups for health reasons. Those are all red flags for, you know, the development of eating disorders. And it requires a serious conversation with your healthcare provider.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And again, I love the work that you're doing coaching moms, because we do need to break some old cycles. And not that anything was wrong, but mm-hmm. It is a way that we have been taught, that our mothers were taught and their mothers taught them, et cetera. But as you've pointed out, we are such powerful role models when it comes to body image, health, and self-worth. And research shows that when a mother's body dissatisfaction is present, it's a strong predictor that their daughter is going to have body concerns. So how do we break that cycle, especially for moms who didn't grow up with a body positive message themselves?
Yeah. You know, it just depends on how badly they want to get better. Some moms are okay with it and they continue down that path. But I think once women, especially, are raising daughters that start mirroring some of those same comments, some of that same body dissatisfaction, that's when I hear moms say, what can I do? How do I do better? And so, as I mentioned, I mean, it's also this whole embodiment journey, which doesn't require going to therapy. It just requires paying attention and actually starting to engage in some simple practices that will change the way you think, the way you speak, the way you behave. But it's not overnight. It's not hard. It's not even hard. It's right. Very simple. You just have to do it. It's like yoga. You can go to a yoga class and get something out of it, but you're not going to be a yogi overnight, right? No. It takes years of practice. And I will say that appreciating your body is a lifelong practice, because our bodies change at every age and stage. I mean, perimenopausal women are having big struggles with their body. Menopausal women continue. I mean, I like to think of aging as a privilege, But it's hard sometimes to look at yourself and go, wow, is that me? You know? So it's an ongoing practice. And even at my age, I still go back to our embodiment coaching and I will pick out a little simple measure and think about that one for the week. So, you know, we have to first recognize the problem and then just decide that we're going to do it. And I think doing it with a friend makes it easy, like finding a good friend that's like, let's work on this together. And you can hold each other accountable.
I'd love to see parents and children, moms and daughters, and like you said, even friends get healthier together. Mm-hmm. What would be helpful to really gain that in our society and at least start in our communities and friend groups?
You know, I think it just takes one woman saying, I am tired of this. Yeah. I'm really tired of this. And I think we can do better. So let's commit to doing better together. The first time we put out a message to our community that we were going to have a webinar on for moms on body image to start a journey, we had 400 people respond.
Wow.
I know.
That's cool.
And so women are desperate for help, but again, we thrive in community. And so finding a group to do this with is really helpful. And then finding a resource that's trustworthy and evidence-based is also helpful. And I mean, I feel like that's what we've built in our coaching series for moms. And it's not hard. You just need somebody to do it with you and you need to keep at it.
In your coaching series for moms, what are some of the most powerful mindset shifts you've seen that help both moms and daughters heal the relationship with their own bodies? I love that you said that girls who've taken the classes and educational resources said, I wish my mom was doing this too.
Yeah. You know, there are a couple, and I can speak from my personal experience. One of the first tips that I followed was really just recognizing what the problem is. So for one day, keep a tally of how many times you have a negative thought about yourself. You walk past the mirror, my hair is fuzzy, you know, oh, I need some lipstick, you know, keep a tally. I lost count. Like I just had to stop at some point. And I was like, wow, this is a bigger problem than I thought. Cause I didn't think I was that bad. But it was a bigger problem than I thought. And then one of the other, which made me more motivated to get better, right? And then one of the other ones that was most helpful for me, and this may sound really stupid simple, but is learning to feel with my body again. Because again, I said, I've been in my head most of my life. I'm definitely separated my head from my body a lot. And so I started, like, I hate cold water, but I decided I'm going to jump in cold water and just feel, and I'm going to focus on feeling. And I did. And instead of getting out and being like, oh my God, it's so cold, I'm miserable, I was like in the water, feeling it. And I was like, this is invigorating. This feels so different. And it was just one of those challenges that had been put in our series. And I was like, you know, when I focus on what I'm feeling, it was actually a lot more fun. And I wasn't complaining so much to myself. And the other thing that helped me feel was in the shower. How many times have you taken a shower and you don't even notice if you washed your hair? You're getting like, oh, did I wash my hair yet? I can't remember. That's because we're in our heads and we're not paying attention to our body. So one of the exercises we also do is in the shower, just pay attention to what you're feeling. Feel the water down your body. Smell your shampoo. Feel yourself rubbing your scalp. Close your eyes and close your ears and listen to the water hitting your scalp. All of that gets you in your body. And it actually is very grounding, very relaxing. It engages that parasympathetic nervous system. I mean, it is good for us, but it also helps you connect with your body and relax. And that's been a new practice for me. Feeling. Go figure.
I love that, getting outside of your head, because that's that, and getting that mind-body connection is so important. And it's, and we were talking about changing old patterns. That's really not something I remember talking to my old mom about. And it, but it is so important. When you were talking about, did I wash my hair? My mind was going to, sometimes I drive home and I was like, wow, How did I even get here? It's like, yeah, our mind is just going. Wow. And I love your example of write down every time you criticize yourself, because it is true. Many times, even as a pediatrician, as a mom, I think I'm not doing a bad job at this or that. And then you realize one of my things that I try to work on is that message about food, because we're so ingrained about finishing your plate or don't ruin your dinner. All the little different messages, as you mentioned, that really change how kids are rewiring or thinking about their body, which they're born to already know when they're hungry, when they're tired, when they have to go to the bathroom, like you mentioned. Dr. Holmes, we've talked about education and communication, but what about parenting tools in the AI space? What is Dr. Momfidence? Tell us about this free AI-powered tool and how it works, how it helps parents get answers they can trust. What makes it different from just Googling?
Oh, thank you so much for this question. We, the Girlology platform has just grown beyond what is sometimes easy to navigate. We have over 600 videos, tips for parents, tips and classes for girls. And one of the things we heard from our community was, it's hard, I can't always find what I'm looking for. There's so much. Where do I start? And so we worked with a developer to create a chatbot and an AI assistant that helps navigate our content. So we call her Dr. Momfidence. I thought that was kind of a cute name.
That is cute.
And she is free. You can go into Dr. Momfidence through our website, ask her any question about girls' health. We cover girls ages 7 to about 15. And she will give you an answer that's based on Girlology content only. So she does not go to Reddit. She does not go to Google. All of our content is created by doctors and psychologists, and including some specialists. So pediatricians, OBGYNs, mental health professionals. And she'll give you an answer that's a nice bullet point answer, but she'll also link you to our videos or our downloadables. And we made Dr. Momfidence free last winter because we really just wanted parents to have access to information that is evidence-based, created by physicians, trustworthy, that will help them raise girls to be confident and body literate. So that is what Dr. Momfidence is. I hope all your listeners will take her for a test ride. She's amazing.
It sounds amazing. And I love that you mentioned that it is absolutely trustworthy, because as we know, artificial intelligence is a great tool, but it has its limitations. And we need to make sure that parents know good resources that gives advice from health professionals, but it doesn't replace the advice of a healthcare professional.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, this is a lot about education, about parenting, about when should I see the doctor? What should I take to the doctor? What will my doctor want to know? There are questions like that. And then there's simple questions like, my daughter's sitting alone at lunch. How should I talk to her about it? Or what do I say when my daughter walks downstairs and says she hates the way she looks? So we have simple, short answers for things like that. But also, like, what to expect when your kid starts an antidepressant, you know, like if they go home and they forgot everything you said, there's some simple things, and then when to call your doctor. So yeah, she is not a replacement for your provider at all, but we just want to help parents be better educated parents and patients, you know.
What would be one sentence to every girl growing up in today's world about her body as it's changing during puberty and menstruation? What would be that one sentence you would tell her?
Oh, I would say your body is going to be changing your entire life. And everything it's doing is what it's supposed to do. So I want you to learn to trust it and to listen to it, and to take good care of it.
Melissa, thank you so much for this powerful conversation and for all the ways you're making girls healthy, smarter, safer, and stronger.
Oh, thank you so much. I love the content that you're putting out there too for parents. It's so helpful. And you are just a little ray of sunshine. I just love talking with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. To our listeners, I know many of you are navigating this stage of parenting right now. And I hope today's episode gave you both guidance and reassurance. You can find links to Dr. Holmes' programs in the show notes, along with her full bio and more resources. And remember, the way we talk to our kids about their bodies becomes their inner voice. Let's make it kind, confident, and full of love. Until next time, let's grow up together.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.